All right. We are live. We are back with another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Made it back mostly alive from Las Vegas. And, you know, first full day back in my own city, I could think of very few things better to do than to hop on here and talk a little bit of football with my boys. So, you know, it's been a little while. Eric, what you been up to, man?
Man, we just finished some cool projects at PFF. We wrote up an analytics volume for some of the teams. We've done some fun articles on quarterback play and pressures and things like that. So that's been a lot of fun. Just missing, hanging out with you guys.
Awesome. I can feel the love today. It's going to be a good episode. Luke, I was kind of close to you, like a 45-minute flight away, in your time zone at least, you know. How are things all the way on the left side of the country?
Things are all right. I pissed away a bunch of money on my car and started making, I started kind of delving into All 22 content, reviewing stuff, trying to flex my film muscles a little bit and maybe get a little bit better at that before next season starts.
Okay. I pissed a bunch of money away in Vegas, and at least at the end of all of this, you have a car that will be able to do things for you. So, you know, you're better off than I am. But there's some things I wanted to talk to you guys about today. Obviously, this is a silly season in the kind of the NFL calendar here, where we're starting to, you know, fiend a little bit for anything football. You know, the Super Bowl is a distant memory, and free agency is around the corner, but not just free agency. We had the combine. So people were also talking about the draft and all of that stuff. And something that came up and has come up quite a bit of late is maybe the Browns should just take Saquon Barkley at number one. You know, he went in there, he blew up the combine, even though he skipped the agility drills, which kind of are important for running backs, but he blew up the combine and he's a great pass catcher. Eric, I saw you talking to some people about that. He's great in the passing game. Like, you know, last year's top 10, top 15 pick, Christian McCaffrey. And so I know you both have takes on this. I have my own, but I'll keep them to myself for right now because I don't want to, to lead the witnesses. But Eric, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the Browns? And I'm going to link it in the show notes, taking all of that draft capital that that Sashi gave them. And all of that cap space, what are your thoughts on them potentially using that money to sign AJ McCarron and then using that number one overall draft pick to draft a running back?
Well, you know, I think the issue is that not only do they need a quarterback, and I think they need to have a couple quarterbacks. McCarron could be one of them, but they also need skill players on the outside to go with, you know, Corey Coleman's not necessarily a bust, but he's not necessarily a person that's made it yet. Josh Gordon's always a question mark. I think, you know, Njoku's actually a pretty good athlete at tight end, but ultimately, like, the reason that the running back position is simply not one you want to draft that high is, you know, there are other positions for which if you forego the option of taking them in the first round, the opportunity to get a player as good or somewhat approximating as good as they are, you know, later in the draft is, of course, like smaller, right? So a quarterback in the first round has a much higher hit rate, even if that hit rate is not 100% or anywhere near that, than like a fourth or fifth round quarterback. Whereas we've seen, you know, last season we had McCaffrey and Fournette go high, and you could argue that Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, and Tariq Cohen later in the draft were all better than them, right? You just sort of don't get that differential necessarily. And of course, then, you know, there's this other issue as well. And it's sort of like this with other sort of non-value positions, I guess, like obviously at the main extreme kicker, but like, you know, running backs are a position where like, there's so much that is independent of how good the player is that go into his production level. And, you know, so what if you draft a guy high and your offensive line gets hurt and he's immediately ineffective? You really wish you would have had, like, you know, capital at a position that is more impervious to offensive line struggles or more impervious to game flow, right? What if the Browns are behind in every game again this year and they simply can't run the ball as much? Barkley's a good receiver. We do know that, however, you know, receiving from the running back position is not nearly as valuable as receiving from the receiver, the tight end receiver position. So, you know, I just simply don't think it's sound just from the market differential. And then also, you know, what they need quarterbacks. And I think it's smarter to draft two quarterbacks in the top five in that case than to draft one running back at one.
Wow. Two quarterbacks. I've seen that a couple of times. We might have to come back to that and have a little bit more discussion, but let me let Luke get in here. And hey, what are your thoughts?
Barkley, I had that exact same thought today about if the Browns drafted a quarterback at 1-4, it would be awesome, but they'll never. I think there's been a lot of interesting work that I've seen in the last couple weeks from like Ben Baldwin at Field Goals and other like analytics people on Twitter, just showing that like the difference between having a very good running back and having whatever running back is like nothing. And I think because of what you mentioned, Eric, just a lot of other factors that, you know, the player himself doesn't have any control over. You know, he doesn't control how good his blocking is. He doesn't control if the blocking math is in his favor or not, because did the defense, you know, fall for the right play? I finally got around to watching an interesting video about the NFC Championship where the run pass option was like changing the blocking math when it turned out to be a run. And if that works or not is completely not up to the running back himself. The running back quality doesn't affect the success or lack thereof of play action at all. It just kind of doesn't matter if you have a good running back. And I think because we are a nation of fantasy footballers, we sort of forget that like the running back is maybe the sixth most important person in the running game if there aren't any tight ends on the field. Like, it just doesn't add much to your team. And when you're going to spend something like the first overall pick, which is this like incredibly valuable resource, like the way to get ahead is to efficiently use your resources, right? To get more out of your resources than everybody else is getting out of theirs. So if you're going to blow an incredibly valuable resource on something that maybe will make you better at that position, but being better at that position doesn't actually help you win games or like propel your team forward at all, you're just kind of pissing away assets.
So how do you, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, and because I, you know, obviously I have a podcast with a noted running back defender, Yinka Allende, and, you know, he'll point to something like, you know, success rate. And the fact that success rate at the running position is at the running from a running back is important to a team. So is there an argument to be made that, you know, if you have, you know, Todd Gurley as your running back, that you would be, you know, better off than, you know, Latavius Murray as your primary running back? And maybe that would help your team's success rate. Look at what Todd Gurley did this year. Is there an argument to be made that, you know, he was more important to his team than Jared Goff?
I would counter, if you can get the 4 yards or whatever you need to have a successful play running, you can probably get it more easily by passing on a short stick route or even a screen or a swing pass or something. It's really easy to get 4 yards through the air, and it's really hard to get 4 yards on the ground.
And the Todd Gurley thing's interesting, right? Because in 2016, he wasn't even a 1,000-yard back. He was one of the least efficient runners in the league. And, you know, I don't think it's because he was bad at playing football. I just think it's simply because there are external factors that can take, you know, like what we found out this season is a very good player and make him extremely ordinary. It's far harder to do that with a comparably leveled quarterback than it would be for a running back.
Okay. So no to running back at number one overall?
Should we rescind Adrian Peterson's MVP?
I mean, probably. I mean, probably.
So here's like an interesting, so because people will bring up the Dallas Cowboys and taking Ezekiel Elliott. And let's assume for now that Jalen Ramsey and Jordan Howard, that combination is not available to them. So if you look at the 2014 Dallas Cowboys, a 12-4 team, you know, won a playoff game, had the league's leading rusher in DeMarco Murray, averaged 4.6 yards per carry on the ground, and averaged 8.9 adjusted yards per attempt in the air. 8.9. In 2015, they averaged 4.6 yards on the ground with noted GOAT and top five overall draft pick Darren McFadden at running back, but averaged 5.7 adjusted yards per attempt, and were subsequently a 4-12 team. 2016, they drafted Ezekiel Elliott. They average 4.8 yards on the ground, so slightly more, but their quarterback is back up to 8.3 adjusted yards per attempt in the air. They are 13-3 that year. I think people look at that and say, oh, Zeke, you know, Zeke, the loss of Murray, Zeke. But the reality is it's just the passing game, right? Like, the running game stayed basically as effective throughout those three seasons, but the huge difference is you go from Tony Romo to Matt Castle to Dak Prescott.
Random question that I have, Eric, and just, you know, it's a complete aside. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but while I was searching for a thing of Ben Baldwin from Field Goals article to link in the show notes that was saying, you know, a bunch of other reasons why you shouldn't draft a running back in the top 20, I stumbled across a thread here with some analytics folks being very upset with spider charts and radar charts that come out around this time of year. Why is that, Eric?
Well, okay, so one of them, and George put it, George Shahuri, my colleague, put it perfectly. He's like, there's nothing more that I want from a graph than to like it, and then I have to turn my head 180 degrees to see it again. So, like, there's always, like, there's obviously, like, half the variables are upside down. But then there's also this issue with, like, we don't know how things are weighted either, right? So every single, like, prong of that thing gets equal weight. So if a guy is like big and tall, for example, then you're going to get a couple, like, you know, spidery things coming out, and everything else is small. If it's Orlando Brown, for example. And then there's also the thing about like area versus like actual, you know, so it's weird. Like, I don't think it depicts the data as well as we think it should, you know, for, you know, I think a few reasons.
Okay, makes sense. Sorry about that, guys. Luke, what was it that you were saying before I took us down that random?
I think it was Josh Hirschmeyer, whatever his last name is. He was doing R-squared correlation data with the combine scores of running backs, and like that, their correlation to various measures of running success. And pretty much all of them had like non-existent R-squareds. They just had no correlation to like how good a running game is. Which is kind of concerning. It either means that the combine drills aren't very helpful or indicative, which might be the case, and there's a lot of discussion around that, or it might just mean it doesn't matter how athletic your running back is, which kind of tells me it doesn't matter who your running back is.
Oh, I like that. I think we're going to leave it on that one. It doesn't matter who your running back is. If you need to research that somewhat, you can look back, I think it was two seasons ago, and see Tim Hightower winning your fantasy football championship for you. Because he got to play alongside Drew Brees.
Spencer Ware.
Boy. Oh, yeah, that guy was supposed to be really good or something until...
Charkandrick West.
He helped me win a fantasy championship once upon a time. I thought he was going to be good. He was a spark freak. Didn't matter.
And just to kind of end this, like, I think we've seen this as Minnesota Vikings fans in the edge case. The Vikings used a sixth-round pick to draft Blair Walsh, and they held on to Blair Walsh far too long because they used draft capital and then eventually money on him. You want to take a kicker using resources that you are willing to give up in a dime when he shows that he's not similarly. So if a guy is the third overall pick, like Trent Richardson, for example, and you find out he can't play, you need to be able to cut bait, right? And at, you know, and the Colts refuse to cut bait, right? Because they use a first round pick on him. Like, luckily the Browns actually, like, you know, did cut bait, but they did so when they could get something for him. But like, running back is like this is somewhat of a disposable piece, right? One game it's Murray, one game it's McKinnon, right? Like, one game, you know, it was Asiata back in the day, right? Like
Ben Tate,
right? Like, you go back and forth. Ben Tate was like a 900-yard rusher for Houston, and then like 2 years later he's on the Vikings. Like, you have to be able you have to be able to dispense with something when it's clearly like, you know, not working. And like, I just think when it clearly doesn't matter who your running back is, like, I just think like a pick that's, you know, such that you're going to have to stick with him because of sunk cost fallacy, you know, it's just too high.
All right. I like all of that. All of that. But I have another question for you guys. So a couple episodes ago, we talked a little bit about, you know, the positions and how they correlate to points and you know, kind of which position groups are the most valuable on the team. And obviously, quarterback, most important position, correlates the most strongly to points. And, you know, just to get the values, we're using, you know, Pro Football Focus grades. But, you know, Nick Olson, who writes at Vikings Territory, yes, Vikings Territory, raised an interesting question because obviously this offseason, you know, Vikings fans are very excited, very much would like to, you know, go all in, upgrade at the quarterback position. Kirk Cousins, you know, by all accounts, is the best available quarterback on the market. But he pointed out that, you know, in the playoffs, it wasn't so much the quarterback position that let us down. It was the fact that, you know, our D line wasn't able to get pressure and seem worn down, wasn't able to stop the run when we needed them to. Our offensive line was very leaky. And even throughout the season, Luke was someone who pointed out that, you know, Case Keenum was doing an unsustainable job of avoiding pressure, but even throughout the season, our offensive line wasn't great. And they were giving up a lot of pressures, even though those pressures weren't turning into sacks. So wanted to get your perspectives, and Eric, I'll start with you on this one here. What makes more sense to invest in this offseason if you're the Vikings and you're looking to build your team in the best possible way? Is it necessary to try to upgrade at the quarterback position? And you know, Case Keenum, he played pretty well overall for the course of last season. Or would it be more important for the Vikings to make some investments in some of those quote lower value positions where they showed some weakness when the season kind of got into the playoffs or even to the end of the season last year?
I think the best thing that the Vikings can do, and people know my bias here, I guess, but the best thing the Vikings can do is invest in freedom. So the issue with Cousins, or the issue with investing in a quarterback of that, you know, price range, is you simply tie up, you lose your freedom. Okay. So, you know, if you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, they, you know, struggled a little bit. Well, they struggled a lot on the outside of on the outside in 2016. They invested a first round pick in Carson Wentz, so they go out and get Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith, and then during the season they get Jay Ajayi. By the way, Jay Ajayi, a fantastic player at the running back position in 2016, only garnered a fourth round pick in a trade, by the way. So they had the freedom to do that, right? Because they weren't investing as much in quarterback. They had the freedom to pay what ended up being a high-end quarterback at the backup position to Nick Foles, because they had freedom by having a rookie contract at the quarterback position. They got Chris Long, Nigel Bradham, Patrick Robinson in the slot. Last 2 years ago, Rodney McLeod. You know, that's the type of thing. You go with a guy like Cousins, you are going to be hamstrung. If you want a three technique, you know, somebody like Muhammad Wilkerson or somebody like Sheldon Richardson or Dontari Poe or something like that, you're going to think three times before you sign a guy to a big contract. You're more likely to take a chance in the draft. You know, whether that's okay or not is you know, is up to for debate. You just I in my opinion, I think you go with what gives you the most freedom. And right now, Kirk Cousins doesn't, to me, offer enough to give away that freedom.
Yeah. So in this case, you know, and obviously you mentioned, you know, defensive tackle is you know, two names that have been, you know, have been mentioned a lot, I'll say, on Vikings Twitter and other places. I guess would you like a Norwell, who's, you know, another name, you know, probably going to be the most highly paid guard after this season. Would you invest in a player like that this offseason versus paying, you know, a Kirk Cousins, or would you still continue to try to find value at those interior offensive line spots?
I think price efficiency matters. The Vikings are in a pretty good place right now with the way their roster is constructed, in relation to the cap. You know, they have, by all accounts, a very good roster, and they also have a solid amount of cap flexibility. And I think abandoning that because they can is a bad idea. It's like a house money fallacy. Like, just because you're playing with house money doesn't mean you can start making bad decisions. And I think, like, if you can get Andrew Norwell for whatever he's going to command, or you can get somebody like Senio Kelemente or Zach Fulton for half that price, like, those guys aren't half as good as Andrew Norwell. And also, you know, guard's like kind of a low octane position anyways. So I still think that that's like a better move and leaves you more set up for success, when you want to extend the players that really do end up commanding big money. And then I also think, just on the value of quarterbacks in general, you know, a good quarterback adds what, like 3 or 4 wins above replacement, and everybody else is like 2 maybe max. But I do think that, like, if you are going to invest so much in your quarterback position that you have to start letting players go, eventually, as those players add up, it starts to outweigh the quarterback position. Like, you know, Joe Flacco is always the example of this. And just, I was just looking up, like, what happened after they signed him to that huge contract after the Super Bowl. And, like, they let Ed Reed go, and then they let,
Anquan
like,
Boldin.
Anquan Boldin go, and, like, they just started, like, hemorrhaging talent. And they've been to the playoffs one time since. So, and like, have clearly struggled. And part of it is also because, you know, they've been committed to a quarterback who's playing pretty poorly. Joe Flacco's played really poorly since that Super Bowl, and they don't have the flexibility to move on. They haven't been able to enter the quarterback market when, you know, Carson Wentz was in the draft, or they, you know, they weren't able to, like, enter the sweepstakes for, you know, they couldn't have traded for, like, Sam Bradford, who would have been a lot better than Joe Flacco, and pretty much has been for as long as he's been healthy. They haven't had the option to do that. They're just stuck with this guy and hope that they can get better. That's not a very good position to be in.
You both said the word value a couple of times, and you know, you've mentioned value kind of the player. You've mentioned value as it pertains to kind of the market. Well, Eric, since you analytics people made up the term value, can you help me understand, like, when you're talking about value and you know maybe exploiting the free agency market, especially as it pertains to the quarterbacks, because these are things that people care about. But then, you know, Luke, I want you to hop in and just kind of talk about it in terms of, you know, team building overall. What is it that you actually mean, with this made-up term?
Right. So, I mean, you have to look at, you can say win probability, expected points, you know, wins above replacement, kind of all of that. But then there's also this idea of distribution too. Like, what, you know, so with Cousins, like, I think the mean is something that's palatable for the Vikings, but it's the sort of like the distribution as well. Like, we don't know necessarily if last season was an aberration or whether or not he is going to, you know, play, or what his like ceiling is, for example, if you gave him like the best, you know, supporting cast in the world. So like there's a couple things there. Whereas Bridgewater, obviously, like kind of a wider distribution. So when we, I think when we talk about value, we not only talk about like how good a guy is, but also how sustainable that is, how much is that going to cost, so on and so forth. So like, you know, we're talking about running back. Like, a guy can be the best running back, the best runner in the history of the NFL. Like, Adrian Peterson's that way, right? Barry Sanders was similar. But ultimately, like, those types of things aren't as valuable as being a top 10 quarterback, or especially not a top 5 quarterback. So, like, I think it's, you know, you have to think about what happens at the position level, what happens, you know, in a distributional sense, and all that kind of stuff goes into value. And obviously, how much you're paying for it goes into that as well.
Yeah, and on, like, how much you're paying for it, I think people often, you know, forget that, like, resources are limited. And I think, you know, we often hear, like, oh, you know, the salary cap is a flexible number and it goes up all the time and you can restructure and you can always figure it out. And you can make it extend, but it is still ultimately finite. And also, being in a position where you have to restructure guys and kick cans down the road, that's how the Saints got in such a hellish situation. And it took like 3 years to get out of that hole. So I think, regardless of the resources you're spending, whether it's money or draft capital, you know, and how you decide how much those things are worth, you have to understand that, like, if you are going to spend your resources on something, your return needs to be acceptable, and it needs to, you know, be better than everybody else is getting when they spend that much. That's how you get ahead. So, you know, when we talk about like price efficiency and we talk about value and stuff like that, what I think we're really all desiring is, hey, you know, we want a quarterback that's good enough, but we also want a quarterback that is efficient and somebody who isn't sucking up more resources than they're worth, because that extra inefficiency, that extra fat that is on that deal, you know, be it overpaying for Sam Bradford or overpaying, you know, in actual dollars for someone like Kirk Cousins, that's capital that could have gone somewhere else that we could have used to make our team better in a different way. So I think, you know, we need to think about like the general concepts of like opportunity cost, and, you know, and then you can really get into the weeds with like economics and auction markets and all kinds of fun stuff with free agency. But the idea that the market is going to set a price for a guy like Kirk Cousins, and if that price is higher than what he's actually worth, it's better to just abandon the deal altogether.
Yeah, I concur. And it's one of the things I think that, you know, this offseason, if time permits, want to take a look at, because I think it would be, you know, interesting. It's something we talk about a lot. I just don't know that anyone's actually done the analysis to show that, you know, having surplus value, I guess, on your roster overall, or specifically at the quarterback position, is actually good for your team. Like, we hear it all the time. Like, you know, the best, your competitive advantage a team can get is, you know, getting a great quarterback on a rookie deal, and you can max it out, all those other things. But I don't know that I've seen it tested. So I think it'd be cool to see some of that done, just to be able to actually show that, you know, Flaccos are bad, and not, and actually have some rigor around the process that shows having a guy like Joe Flacco being the highest salary cap hit at his position is not good for your team.
And the opportunity cost of not being able to pursue any other quarterback since the year 2012.
Absolutely. Well, we've been like, I feel like we've been a little negative on the show thus far. So to bring us home, we're gonna bring things back up a little bit here. We're gonna flip it to Eric, and reminding him to get himself off mute. And we're gonna talk about this article that I didn't even realize he dropped because I was traveling and stuff. But I've read it now, and it is awesome. Eric, tell us about the new passer rating that you and George worked on, and why we should pay attention to it.
So I didn't realize I was on mute. Okay. All right. Well, I'm back. Okay. So a couple weeks before the season was done, my colleague, George Shahuri, and I were talking about quarterback play. And one of the things we were looking at was sort of how unstable touchdowns and interceptions are. And actually, if you look at the PFF quarterback annual, we looked at like the stability of different metrics. So, you know, the touchdowns and interceptions were sort of among the sort of least stable things, right? And as you know, sports analytics proverbs go, it's probably, you know, easy to, you know, to say that, you know, results are less stable than processes. And so what we did is we took our highest graded throws, which are called big time throws, and we took our lowest graded throws, turnover worthy plays, and we put those in place of touchdowns and interceptions, and we reran quarterback rating for, you know, all, you know, basically all time, but specifically for the 2017 season. And we looked at sort of like how these guys stacked up, and, you know, it ended up being like Tom Brady ended up being first, and I believe like Drew Brees leapfrogged Alex Smith, who ended up being third, even though he led the league in passer rating. And so, yeah, it was kind of a cool little look. It ended up in a more stable metric. So you get something like 0.48 for correlation coefficient versus like 0.4 or 0.39 for regular passer rating. Some interesting looks. If you're a Viking fan, I'm going to look at Case Keenum here. Case Keenum's passer rating in traditional passer rating was 98.3. In our new passer rating, it was 93.4. So he actually had a few more. He had 11 turnover-worthy plays, just 7 interceptions. He had 20 big time throws, 22 touchdown passes. So those compressed a little bit. If we're looking at the possible new quarterback for the Vikings, Kirky Cousins, he was 93.9 pass rating last year, 27 touchdowns, 13 picks. We had him at 22 big time throws, 17 turnover worthy plays. So his pass rating would have been 87.7 had we, you know, had we calculated passer rating that way. So kind of a, both quarterbacks there a little bit playing over their skis a season ago.
That's cool. And I guess so, Luke, and we didn't talk about this before, but I know that, you know, messing around with the passer rating formula is something that you kind of tinker around with. It feels like maybe every off season or two. What are your thoughts on, you know, this work by George and Eric, and has it inspired you to continue your quest to perfect the passer rating?
Yeah, I love it. Because I think in concept, you know, the idea of taking the best plays a quarterback makes and the worst plays a quarterback makes and like the general production and all that, and like kind of lumping it all together into one nice little number is this awesome goal. And I'm really glad that like PFF has taken up the job of trying to make it better than this formula that was made in like 1962. I love the idea of using big time throws and like not only just and turnover worthy plays, not only just to like adjust for dropped interceptions and interception luck and stuff like that. That's like a great thing, but also because with touchdowns, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, but like a big time throw can be something that ended up not being a touchdown, right? It can be like, if it was this awesome throw for like 30 yards on 3rd and 10 or something like that, this like big EPA kind of play, right? Eric, you're on mute.
Uh-oh. We've lost Eric to mute again. Come back to us, Eric.
That is 100% correct, Luke. And both that I was on mute, and then also that that the touchdowns and interceptions thing. You actually gave me, so this is why I was a little bit, my Madden awareness would be negative here. I was going to run 2015 again for all of the Teddy haters. Let me do this. Hold on one sec.
But in the meantime, so I really like the idea that like, cause if you did an awesome throw, you know, if you throw this great ball down the sideline and it gets caught, I think this actually happened to Case Keenum. It gets caught. And it turns out that instead of, you know, extending over the pylon, he was out on the one, and then it was a rushing touchdown. Now you don't get like credit for that touchdown in passer rating, even though you pretty much did that. And like from an analytic perspective, from an EPA perspective, oftentimes the touchdown pass itself is one of the smaller plays on the drive, especially if it's a drive that like goes down to the two and then it's a touchdown pass. So I really like the idea of, you know, really boiling away the noise and finding the high impact plays and using that in the formula instead. I think the idea of like completion percentage and yards and stuff still needs work. I like using, I tried once, I didn't write or do anything. I was just playing around using success rate instead of completion percentage and just plugging that into the formula. Mm-hmm. I saw some interesting discussion on Twitter today about success rate and like why the bookmarks are where they are, but that's also a fun thing to talk about. But I think there's also, you know, a lot more work to do, but big time throws and turnover worthy plays are a great replacement for touchdowns and interceptions.
So Teddy in 2015 had 14 touchdown passes. He had 23 big time throws. So you have a little bit of a discrepancy here. One that's interesting to me is Sam Bradford in 2016 at 20 touchdown passes. He had 30 big time throws. So he, you know, the issue with Bradford in 2016 was the lack of positively graded throws that weren't big time throws. So he was very like, he would hit really nice, like obviously the Green Bay game comes to my mind where he made a ton of like really brilliant throws, but on the play for play basis, he wasn't quite as good. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at Bradford's like a 101 rating, if you take big time throws and turnover worthy plays, Teddy Bridgewater as a rookie had 14 touchdowns and 13 big time throws. So he was a little bit different that year. So
what would his 2015 passer rating have been?
Actually, it goes down a little because he threw 17 turnover worthy plays that year.
Okay.
So they're both about, it goes down like half a point. So he had a few more turnover worthy plays that year. You know, he was under pressure a lot, although all those kinds of things. And so, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting way to look at it. You know, Bridgewater as a rookie had only 9 turnover worthy throws the entire time. You could probably make the argument he was a little bit better as a rookie than he was as a second year player, but you know that he didn't have the sort of like ball and chain of Adrian Peterson with him that year either.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I've seen too, is that especially in that last part of the season, his rookie year. Teddy was much better than 15 because they actually ran an offense that seemed to be suited to him. But
And I think like the Bradford angle is really interesting, right? Like you wonder, you know, as a dark horse, where does Bradford go? And can, you know, obviously like if you put him in the right position and he's healthy, maybe you can get something out of him. And you saw week one how brilliant he could be. I wonder if he isn't a player that could emerge as the Vikings' next starting quarterback. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's something that that actually Yinka asked me the other day, and I actually wouldn't mind that. And I feel like I've been fairly consistent. It's whichever one of these four quarterbacks that I think are similar in terms of like tier, in terms of skill level, in terms of what they need around them to succeed. Whichever one of them we can get for not a lot of money, I'm kind of okay with. Like, if the doctors say Sam Bradford can go out there and play, obviously you need to have a high-end backup for him. But just given how things went last season, Sam Bradford can't command a ridiculous amount of money this year. Like, he can't because his knee just stopped working at some point. So if you get a Bradford, a solid backup quarterback, and then potentially draft someone with a top 100 pick, as I think they should do anyway, I'm okay with that. If they can drive Case Keenum's value down from the, you know, 20 some million dollars they were talking about before free agency started to somewhere, you know, 15 Mike Glennon-ish type money, Case can come on back. We'll get another backup, and Kyle Sloter and a rookie can fight it out for that QB3 spot. I'm good with that too. Just the idea of making someone who career to date has basically been an above average to average NFL quarterback, the highest paid player in the NFL. I just don't, and maybe I haven't looked enough or looked the right way. I see scant evidence when you look back over NFL free agency history that strategy of maxing out just a random guy who happens to hit free agency at the right time is the best way to build your team.
Yeah. And I think, again, like, and this might have been after I cut out, but basically, like, you just lose freedom, right? You lose freedom to explore like the new trends in the NFL, on defense, and you know, you lose the freedom to draft a good quarterback and a top 100 pick. You lose a lot of freedom when you do this, and I think this is like, you know, and I was on Washington radio a week ago. I don't think it's aired yet, but basically, like, my biggest question about Kirk Cousins is, why is Alex Smith the starting quarterback for Washington now? You know, because in theory, those people know more about him than anybody, and there could be a reason. They could simply think he's cheap, you know, or they want to be cheap, and so they go with the Alex Smith option. I think it'd be silly to give up a really good cornerback and a number three to do that, but that could be one explanation. Another explanation could be that they've seen him play, they've seen him practice, they've seen him command a huddle for 3 years as a starting quarterback, and they're not impressed. So I think that needs to be an important part of the conversation that really hasn't been yet.
All right, Luke, bring us home, and whatever you say needs to be positive.
Needs to be positive. Okay.
You know, feedback on Twitter and stuff that, you know, people being too negative and not giving people credit and stuff like that.
Got you.
So whatever you bring us home on needs to be nice about somebody.
All right. So there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about like efficiency and value and stuff, and especially because it's free agency, you know, we're talking about contracts, and this is too money, and this is, you know, too much money or you know, not good enough players and stuff. It is utterly astounding what Rick Spielman and Brzezinski and the whole front office have been able to do since they restructured their whole operation in 2012. Not only from a perspective of drafting pretty well, you know, no matter how you measure it, the equity that they've gotten, especially out of recent drafts, like from guys like Elfline and what we thought Cook was going to be, but, you know, guys like Kendricks and Diggs and Hunter, but also in being relatively responsible and patient in free agency, you know, maybe losing out on guys like Michael Johnson, but getting guys like Linval Joseph, finding the value play and finding the hidden gem that you can get for less than he's worth has been a huge reason why the Vikings have such a good roster right now. It's a huge reason why we hear all these rumors about Kirk Cousins wanting to go to the Vikings and everybody going, well, duh, they're the best team. The reason that the Vikings are the best team is because they have a philosophy that they've stuck to, and that philosophy is a good one. Most importantly, like, it works. So that is where I'll bring it home to. Rick Spielman and Rob Brzezinski are very good at their jobs, and it's been because they have made very smart decisions and not very impulsive ones, except for in like crazy situations like trading for Sam Bradford.
That's good. We will leave it there. They are very good at their jobs, which of course means whatever the decision that they make, you should be happy about and stop your complaining. Because what do you bloggers and nerds know Flip. About anything football related? But with that, obviously,
I know Flip listens to the show. We love you.
We're definitely getting a tweet about this. Probably, you know,
I'd be ashamed and disappointed if we did not.
With that said, Eric, you know, you did say you had some exciting things on the go. I don't know if all of those things are things that are being published. When's the next forecast dropping? What's on the go for you, man?
Yeah, so it's going to be an exciting day tomorrow because I'm assuming this will be up. And then the PFF forecast, the podcast I do with George Shahuri, that'll be up tomorrow. Some interesting discussions about draft stuff. We always do sort of a preview and then a little bit more talk about quarterback play. And then, yeah, I think most of the stuff on PFF is draft related. I'll be helping out with that a little bit, but if you want some, you know, what many have hailed as the worst mock draft in the history, go to profootballfocus.com, have at it. Other than that, just kind of, you know, off season is fun time to do research.
Yes, sir. And Luke, have you found your off season muse, or is tape going to be the thing for you? You digging into the all 22 and going to give us some stuff, or is that really just for yourself right now?
Well, I've been tweeting out some stuff. I've been toying around with the idea of setting up Periscope, but that's still kind of something that I'm just experimenting with. I will probably dive more into the draft when people's draft guides start coming out, because people are better scouts than I am. But right now, I've been writing a lot less frequently just because it's the off season. But if you take a look on Twitter, hopefully you can see some all 22 of guys. I did a little mini ditties last week on Jahlil Johnson and Ben Gedeon. So similar kind of size stuff like that. Just casual looking at plays and talking about what I see.
Well, all right then. We've covered a lot. I got really nothing else to say, gentlemen. As always, it's a pleasure. Listeners, thank you for sticking out with us this far. My name is Jason Brown again. This has been an episode of the Pocket Protectors, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.